All right, Rabbi, say good morning. Let's begin. Our shiur this morning is dedicated by Yonason and Jennifer Kaplan in commemoration of the Yahrzeit of Jen's father, and by Anne Friedman, Jennifer's mother, honor of the Yahrzeit of her husband, Stephen Friedman, Shmuel Leib ben Usher, Zichrono Livracha. We hope that in the merit of our Talmud Torah, the Neshama will have an aliyah and the family a Nechama. And I will say with that, let's begin. We have an interesting daf ahead of us today. Today's daf is Chaf Beis 22, and we are picking up on Chaf Aleph Amud Beis 21b, the Mishnah. Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov Omer. Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov says as follows. So we'll say, still talking about the halachos concerning Bechar Behema Tahora, right? Obviously, that's the topic over here. But specifically, we got into the topic in the first paragraph of this chapter. So we got into the issue of, if you're purchasing animals, essentially, how do you know whether or not the animal that gives birth, or I should say, the offspring that occurs after you purchase the animal is Bechar or not? So that was the topic of our discussion. But as a result, Rabbi Akiva kind of introduced us into the world of animal miscarriages, right? And ultimately, again, Behema Daka, Behema Gasa, and what happens under those circumstances. We're kind of going to continue on that theme just a little bit more. So says the Mishnah, Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov Omer, Behema Gasa Sheshafa, Chararas Dam. If you have a Behema Gasa, I will say now that what this literally means is it gave birth to like a chunk of blood. Chararas blood, Chararas Dam means like a... like a mass. It gives birth to a mass. Now, but here's the idea. The mass looks like a solidified mass of blood. There is no discernible fetus in that. But nevertheless, again, that's what it gave birth to. So we'll say, so now we make these, so, well, let's play it out. So it says the Gemara. Harizuti cover. You have to bury that. Now, both of this is assuming that this animal has not yet given birth. This animal has not yet given birth. So it hasn't given birth. But what it does do is it delivers, quote unquote, this chunk, this mass of blood. How is it to cover? You have to bury it. And we'll say this is a solid mass. So ultimately, again, you have to bury it. Uptura min habachora, and any subsequent births of the animal are ultimately pater from bechar. Okay, so I'm sorry. So it sounds like it's talking about. It sounds like that we look at this chararas dam as a miscarriage. Look at Rashi. Rashi says, ha-charara. So you have to go ahead and bury this mass. Da'asura ba'ano. Because ultimately, again, the mass is asur ba'ano. You can't get any benefit from it. Why? Shema vlad zachar haya. Because perhaps this was the bechar animal. Shenimuk. Ultimately, again, that dissolved within this mass. The kaddish ba'bechar b'yitziyasa. And therefore, again, a bechar ultimately has kiddusha. So maybe, again, this animal has kiddusha, or this mass has a fetus inside of it that dissolved. Therefore, again, Allah HaMaisa, you can't get any benefit from it. Because you can't get any benefit from it, you bury it. Good. Says the Gemara. Tani Rabbi Chiya. And I will say again, you bury it, and Allah HaMaisa, any subsequent offspring is pater from Bechor. Good. So far, so good. Tani Rabbi Chiya. Eina metam, lo b'magav, lo b'masa. So Rabbi Chiya comes along and says, oh, but one important caveat, which is that Allah HaMaisa, that mass does not convey tumah. That mass does not convey tumah. Neither conveys tumah maga through contact or masa through carrying it. Nebosai, now take a look at Rashi for just a moment. Masa kinevela. Nebosai, so here's something very interesting. So what we just got finished saying in the Mishnah is that what? What do you do with the mass? What do you do with the mass? You bury it. Why do you bury it? Because you assume that there's a fetus in there. That's why you bury it. Yet comes along Rabbi Chiya and says, oh, by the way, but it's not metame with maga and masa. So says Rashi, so it's not metame ki maga masa and kinevela. Says Rashi, hashto sakadaitcha mishum delo chayshina shema vlad nimok, amayti kaver. Now we'll say, now bepashtos, it sounds like what Rabbi Chiya is doing is arguing on the Mishnah. And he's saying, it's not metame me maga and me masa. Why? Why? Because I don't assume that there is some type of fetus in there. I don't assume that there's any type of fetus. Therefore, again, there's no tumah. To which the Gemara says, but if that's the case, I might cover. Remember, both sides. If if there's a fetus that's born and that fetus dies, that fetus is born dead, that is metame kinevela, right? Ultimately, again, so therefore says the Gemara over here, up until now, we're assuming that you have to bury it because halacha lemaisa, there's a fetus in there. We assume there's a fetus in there. Rabbi Chiya comes along and says, it's not metame, therefore telling us there's no fetus in there. If there's no fetus in there, I might cover. Then why am I obligated to go ahead and bury this mass? Top of Chaf Beis and Aleph, Kedei Lefaris Samashu Niftera Min HaBachora. Nebo say, Twitch, the Gemara gives a very enigmatic answer. We bury it, we make you bury it, so that people should know that the subsequent birth of this animal is Pater from Bechor. Look at Rashi. Omeshani Kedei Lefaris Samashu La'im Sheptura Min HaBachora Timit Kabino Lecharora Mechaskina Lebevlad. So, okay, so we'll say this logic is going to be a bit strange. So now what we're saying over here is, it's not metame b'maga b'masa, right? It's not metame b'maga b'masa. If that's the case, why do you have to bury it? You only have to bury it so that people will know that the mother is therefore exempt from the halachas of bechar. That when she gives birth to another animal, that animal is not a bechar. I don't understand. L'meimra, so that's telling me then, divlad ma'al yuhu. Again, if the mother is exempt from bechar, then what does that mean? That means there was a fetus. Right? If you tell me that it's a fetus, it's a Vlad Ma'alya, then I will say what? Va'amai in metame lobamaka lobamasa. Again, I will say, we're going around in circles a little bit over here. I got it. You bury it to tell me that the mother is Pater from Bechar. Pater from Bechar. If the mother is Pater from Bechar, that's because it was a Vlad. And that's why you have to bury it. And if there was a Vlad, why isn't it metame b'magen b'masa? Some Rabbi Yochanan, here we go. Mishum bitl barov noguba. So we'll say to Rabbi Yochanan responds and he says, you're right. There is, ultimately again, we assume that there is a Vlad in there. We assume that there is a fetus in there. But halacha lemaisa, we also assume that what? That the fetus is batel to the other stuff. It's not a scientific term, but you understand. Right? It's batel to the other stuff. This, remember, again, when that fetus comes out, and especially in this case where it's a charara, it's a mass of blood, there's a lot of other organic material from the mother that has nothing to do, well, not nothing to do, but is not part of the fetus. So because of that, the Gemara says, we assume that ultimately, again, the fetus is butthole in the rest of the stuff. So I'll say, so this yields something very interesting. So what we're saying is like this. When the mother gives birth to this mass, what the Mishnah calls this chararas dam, so first of all, we're going to say it's buried. Why is it buried? Why is it buried? So both say, it's buried because we assume there's a fetus in there, and then also that people should know that therefore this mother is exempt from subsequent halachos of Bechor. But why isn't it metami b'maga and b'masa? Because we assume that the fetus is batel to the other stuff in the mass. Take a look at Rashi. L'meimra, abat bitel b'rov, l'hachi ina metami, shebatel habasa b'rov dam, So ultimately, again, we assume that the nafal, that the offspring, the fetus, is bottle in the rest of the mass. And Rabbi say, this is Rabbi Yochanan going according to his reasoning. Remember again, so Rabbi Yochanan is one who just said that in order to reconcile all of this, we just hold of bittel barov. Bittel barov, the fetus is bottle in the rest of the mass. Therefore, again, Allah Chalamai said, exempts the mother from Bechor, because there is a fetus there. You have to bury it in order to make a general declaration that people should know the animal is subsequently butter from Bechor, but it is not, bless you, it's not Mentai B'magam B'masa, because it is butter. Beautiful. V'az Rabbi Yochanan Tameh. Rabbi Yochanan goes according to his logic. Dom Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, v'Rabbi Shimon Amru Davar Echad. So what Rabbi Yochanan says as follows. That Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov and Rabbi Shimon both said the same thing. Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov had the Amra. So also Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov is the one who's quoted in our Mishnah. Right? Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov is the author of our Mishnah. So the Rabbi Shimon Mai, what did Rabbi Shimon say? Here we go. Disnan. Hashalya babayis, habayis tame. If halacha lemaisa, you have a shalya. What's this? So a shalya is a placenta. Right? You have an afterbirth. Right? You have the shalya in the home. So the home is tame. The home is tame. Look at Rashi just a moment. Hashalya babayis shepila isha shalya ve'in vlad nikerba. A woman delivers a placenta, but there is no discernible fetus there. Nevertheless, again, the home contracts tumah. Right, the bayis is tame. Why is that? Lo shehashalya vlad. It doesn't mean that we don't assume that the placenta is the child, is the fetus. Rather, ela shein shalya below vlad. Rather, again, what Chazal were saying was what? There's no placenta without a baby. In other words, that ultimately, again, if there is a placenta, that means there was a fetus. So what happened? What happened to the fetus? Rabbi Shimon Omer, Vlad Nimuk Ad Shelo Yatsa. So Rabbi Shimon says, what happened to the fetus? The fetus dissolved into the placenta material. So it's coming out now as a mass, and although, again, discernibly, I only see a fetus, but I understand ultimately to be a fetus, and also, I see to be a placenta, and a dissolved fetus. So what Rabbi Yochanan is doing is saying that Rabbi Shimon is the same as Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov. That both are essentially saying that whenever you have the mother deliver this mass, we assume that in the mass, ultimately, again, is a dissolved fetus. So you have it over here, in this case over here, where the mother, this is by human beings, by people, the mother delivers a placenta, we assume that there is a dissolved fetus inside of that placenta, and therefore, again, it conveys tumah. We have Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov in the Mishnah telling me that in that mass, we assume there is a dissolved fetus. Therefore, halacha lemaisa, you will bury it. The mother is exempt from subsequent bechar, but it's not matami b'makin b'masa because it's batel barov. Beautiful. Says the Gemara. Let's go back there. So I'll just tell you. Yeah, so the Shulchan Aruch actually paskins this way. This is a straight out halacha, Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov's statement. This is in Hilchos in Yardaya, Hilchos Bechar Behema Tamea Shintes Vav Zayin. It's a longer halacha. I'll just read to you from the end. The end of it is Shaf Achararas Dam. If the mother gave birth to a mass of blood, again, remember, we'll say this is a mass, a solid mass. Petura Mea Bechora. She is exempt from Bechora afterwards, the mother, because we assume again that there's a nafal in there. V'acharara tikaver, you have to bury the mass. L'faris samashi p'tur mea bechora. And you have to bury the mass in order to go ahead and publicize that she is pater from Bechora. Good, that's how he paskin. Says the Gemara, let's go weiter. So Tanan Hasam, ein, this is actually a very interesting halacha. Ein l'nefalim psichas hakever, ad shiya agilu rosh kipika. So this is actually very interesting. So the halacha is that we call psichas hakever. Now I will say, the truth is, we're going to see, this actually has different kinds of ramifications in different types of circumstances. So in the nefalim psichas hakever, let me find this here, but just one second. So in the nefalim, look at Rashi, just a moment, psichas hakever. So Rashi says over here, isha shemis ubra b'me'eha. If a woman unfortunately miscarries, and what happens? But the fetus has died inside of her. V'yashva ala mashber, and she's getting ready to deliver. V'niftach kever harechem bebayis zeh, and her womb opens up in this home. We're going to define what this means. V'lo yotza havlad, but ultimately, again, the child was not yet delivered. V'otzi'u lebayis acher, tamei habayis yishon kilin lo. So we'll say, essentially, what the Gemara is saying is like this. We're going to see, by the way, a lot of these sugyas in Meseches Nida in greater depth. But essentially what the Gemara is saying is like this, that at a certain point in time when there's a psichas hakever, an opening of the womb, so ultimately it's as if, for certain respects, the child is born, and therefore, again, if the fetus is dead, it conveys tumah. Okay, without getting into the technicalities here. So the Gemara says, how large, so I, literally translated, ein l'nefalim psichas hakever, there is no opening of the womb in all of its ramifications until the head of the fetus is the size of a pika. Now, we'll say that what that means is the head of the fetus, size of a pika, means essentially that if the head of the fetus is the size of a pika, that's the amount that it's opening up the womb before it goes ahead and is born. My kipika, right? So what's a pika? Says the Gemara, Amrafuna, kipika shel tzemer. Oh, it's like a pika of wool. Very helpful, right? So I'll say, so interestingly enough, and Rashi over here, of course, sheds incredible light on this. Pika shel tzemer lemoshil, whatever that means, right? So Rashi points out over here, perish, in the Hagos, the Tzuna, he says, perish paka'as salil kador shel chut. So it's interesting, he calls it kador shel chut, means what? A ball of thread. A ball of string, a ball of thread. So I both say, so in English, this word is a whorl. Right? W-H-O-R-L. Whorl or whirl. The definition of a whorl is a small wheel or pulley in a spinning wheel, spinning machine, or spindle. Okay? Thank you. I prepare for this year. Right? So I say, so that, so that's the world. So again, it's some, a small wheel or pulley in the spinning wheel, spinning machine, or spindle. So it happens to be a little, the Hagos at Siyudim is actually a much easier definition, a ball of string, which is a bit easier. Okay. Either way, we're going to see that it's something, really what it is it's something on a serious level. It's something that holds the thread in a spinning machine, in a loom. That's what this is. That's the pika. So it says the Gemara, Amar Rav Huna, pika shel tzemer. Amar lechiyeh barav l'Rav Huna. Rebbe, so listen to this. So now we're not finished with the pika. So now you told me that the pika is the thing in the loom that holds the ball of wool. So now I have a further shayla. So Amar lechiyeh barav l'Rav Huna. So chiyeh barav said to Rav Huna, Rebbe, perish, tell me, shel shasi o shel arif. So we'll say, remember again, in a loom, you always have the warp and the woof, right? You have the threads that go in the different directions. Apparently, again, each of them had their own pika, right? And they had a pika of different sizes. So which pika is this referring to, right? Is this the pika of the warp or the pika of the woof? Amalei Tanya, pika shel shasi. So he answered him, it is the pika of the warp. Divrei Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Huda Omer, shel arev. Rabbi Huda says, no, it's the pika of the woof. Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Tzadok, Omer, Mishiyiru Tififios. So Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Tzadok comes, there's a different shir. American Gimel, so we're trying to figure out at what time there's a quote-unquote opening, what we call Psichas HaKever. Psichas HaKever means an opening of the womb. Opening of the womb has, for our purposes right now, it's a Shaila in Tuma. When we get into Hilchos Nida, we'll discuss that Psichas HaKever ramifications for Nida, right? For Nida. So again, but for right now, we're not talking about Nida, we're talking about Tumah. So Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Tzadok says, at what point in time is the womb considered to be open? Mishiyira Tefifios. Rashi says over here. So Mishiyira Tefifios. Rabbi Eliezer and Tzadok Palig Atanakamo. Va'amar Afagav Shiloi Gilu Rosh Kipika. Yish psichas hakever mishiyiftach rachma kolkach shiru pesach rachma tefifios. So Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov is coming to argue on the Tanakama. The Tanakama said the shear for psichas hakever, the shear for the opening of the womb, ultimately is what kepika, that the head of the fetus is the size of the pika, thereby opening up the womb that amount. Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Saluk says no, it's different. Mishiru tefifios, my tefifios. What does that mean when you see the tefifios? Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Shmuel, Mishum Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Tzadok, Kachayu Mefarshem Yerushalayim. This is the way they explain Yerushalayim. Kipreda. This is like a mule. Shekoras Lahatil Meimeha. So apparently, when a mule squats in order to urinate, Venires Pika Mitoch Pika. Apparently, when she squats to urinate, you're able to see into the womb, and you're able to go ahead and see the folds of the womb. So that level of opening of the womb, ultimately, again, is called psichas hakever. So Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov says that would be the definition for the opening of the womb, which Rabbi said, we then remember, just to understand the ramifications of this. The ramifications of this would be that halacha lamaisa, if, and this is true, this would be true ultimately, again, by an avela as well as by a human being. So if the mother were delivering, and ultimately the womb were opened this amount, that would be ki'ilu as if what? As if the deceased fetus was born and would already go ahead and convey tumah. Okay, says the Gemara. Amar Rav Huna, shamati shtei pikos. Supposedly, now that we started the topic of pikos, right, of this thing that holds the ball of thread on the loom. Now that we started speaking about pikos, Rav Huna says, I learned two halachas about pikos. Achal shal shasi va'achal shal arif. One was about the pika of the warp. One was about the pika of the wolf, ve'in li lefarish. But I don't remember what I learned. Right? I know that I learned. First of all, this is very affirming. Very affirming. I know I heard something. I just don't know what I heard. Right? He's honest. Very honest. So what he's saying is, really what he's saying is like this. I know that in halacha, there was a point where we made a distinction between these two type of pikos. But I don't remember what the distinction was. Kiyasir Avdimi Am Rabbi Yochanan, Shalosh Piko Shamati. So Kiyasir Avdimi came along and said to Rabbi Yochanan, I actually heard, I'll tell you one better. I heard the halachos about three different pikos. Acha Shal Shasi, one pika for the warp, one pika for the wolf, Acha Shal Arif, Va'acha Shal Pika Gidola Shal Sakon. We'll say there's another pika. When making large sacks, so they use the different kind of loom, so that loom had its own kind of pika. Ve'ein li lefarish, but I don't remember what I heard about each of them. So I learned that each of these types of pikos, right? So we'll say really what we're saying over here is like this. It's not a halacha in the pika. What is it saying? These three pikos are three different sizes. So I heard halachos where ultimately, again, the size of the particular pika corresponds to unique nuance in that halacha. But I don't remember what the halachos were corresponding to the sizes of the pikos. So the Gemara says, when Rabin came along, Pirsha Meshed Rabbi Yochanan. See, he explained the relevance of all of the Shema of all of the Pikos. Here we go. Shal Isha Kishal Shasi. So we'll say again, when it comes to the opening of the womb of a woman, at what point in time is the womb of a woman considered to be open? Again, we'll see later on for Nida purposes, but right now it's for Tuma purposes. If the child has died in utero, at what point in time is the womb considered to be open? Kishal Shasi. That's if it's opened up and if the head of the fetus is the size of the Pika Shal Shasi. The warp Pika. Right, the warp Pika. The warp ultimately, again, being the piece that holds the ball of thread on the warp part of the loom. Shal Behema. Right? Again, what's considered to be the psicha sakari, the opening of the womb for a behema? Kisha arif, the pika of the wolf. Pika gidola shel sakon. What do I do ultimately again with the shear of the large pika that's used to make sacks? So this is actually very interesting. Says the Gemara, here we go. Kidesanya, gush haba mi base hapras o mi eretz ha'amim. A very interesting case. If you have a clod of dirt that came from a Beis HaPras. What's a Beis HaPras means a field in Chutz La'aretz. Right? Now remember again, we've learned this many times. Fields in Chutz La'aretz always have a problem. What are we concerned about? Graves. Right? Bones, right? The corpses. Because the idea is, you see, in Eretz Yisrael, we are very organized about where we bury. Why are we organized? Kohanim. Right? Kohanim. And even aside from Kohanim, Tumantara, we have to be very vigilant about in Eretz Yisrael. In Chutz La'aretz, we assume there's not that same level of vigilance. Therefore, again, I will say, there is a rabbinic tumah imposed upon Eretz Ha'anim. Right? A rabbinic tumah that's imposed upon the lands outside of Chutz La'aretz, because we never know where there's a grave with his bones. Good. So what happens if someone brings a gush, right, a clod of earth that comes from a Beis HaPras, that comes from a field, Me'eretz Ha'anim, and comes from Chutz La'aretz? So we'll say, so what's the halacha? Shi'uro Kepika, Gidola Shel Sakon. Ultimately, again, I will say the shear. Now, the shear for what? Take a look at Rashi. Shiro, Letame Ba'ohel, Velisrof Alov Truma Vekachim, Kepika, Gidola Shel Sakon. So, this is actually quite interesting. The shear for that clod of earth, the shear for that clod of earth to convey Tuma Ba'ohel, to convey Tuma under a roof, is what size? The size of the Pika that is used on the loom to go ahead and create sacks, to spin, to thread sacks. So that is also shehu kichosim hamartzufin v'yeshno b'tzad ha'elyon shel magufos hachavis halachamis. And this, I will say, is the same shear. This is the same size. The Gemara is just giving other ways that we can recognize the size, like the seal of the martzufin. Rashi says over here, sakin gedolim shel gemi kishenolin osan chosmin osan. Apparently, the large sacks that are made out of reeds, they would seal it with some type of seal. So the size of the pika for the sack loom is the same size as the seals on the side, which is also v'yeshno b'tzada elyon shel magufas hachavis halachamis. And apparently in Beit Lechem, they used to make some type of special type of chavis, of barrel, and they used to put the magufa, some type of clay seal on the top of it as well. That is the size of the sack pika. So we'll say, therefore, halacha l'maisa, what comes out is as follows. The three pikos, right, each of them have a different halachic relevance. The pika, ultimately, again, of the shesi, of the warp thread, that's the size of the opening for a woman's womb for tuma purposes. The size of the pika, of the arev, of the warp thread, that's the opening of an animal's womb. And ultimately, again, the size of the pika, ultimately, again, for the larger loom that is used to weave sacks, that ultimately is the shear for a clod of earth brought from Chutz La'aretz in which it would convey to Mas Ohel. Beautiful. Amar Eish Lakish Shana Yehud Nesiyah. Halokeach was another interesting case. Halokeach tzir me'am ha'aretz. Listen to this case. I purchased brine. Now, we'll say, just to define our terms over here, what tzir means. Tzir is not like brine, like you and I think of. It's what the Gemara calls brine. But really what it is it's fish juice, right? It's just the stuff that comes out of fish, right? So that we'll call it brine. Halokeach tzir me'am ha'aretz. Listen to this case. I buy tzir from an am ha'aretz. So we'll say, so now, what's my problem? What's look at Rashi? So the Gemara says, no, not yet. Sorry. So what happened? Well, let's analyze. So I go ahead and I bite through my arts. Mashiko b'mayim v'tar. Both say is amazing. So now apparently there's a tumah issue which we'll discuss. So how do I remedy the tumah issue? Mashiko b'mayim. I do something called hashaka. The Rabbi says is actually quite interesting. So the concept of hashaka means like this: that there are certain things which could be purified if they kiss mikvah water. What that means is there just has to be some type of connection between the mikvah water and the other liquid item. And ultimately, again, we'll say, by the way, you should know, almost all mikvahs today work with the principle of hashaka, right? When you go to the mikvah, so you don't have 40 sa'ah, right, necessarily of rainwater, but rather, again, usually we have two boros, two different cisterns, one of rainwater, one of regular water, and because they kiss, because there's hashaka, ultimately, again, the rainwater converts all of the water into mei mikvah. Interestingly enough, this works with tumah and tahara as well. Namely what? That halacha lemaisa, if you have this tzir, if you have this brine, which is tumah, and you now want to make it tahara, so what do? You put it in a bucket, you immerse it in a mikvah. And what do? You immerse it just below the water line of the mikvah waters. And what does that do? The mikvah waters kisses the brine, and ultimately, again, everyone lives happily ever after, right? The brine is going to be tahar. So says the Gemara, what's the problem? So what's the issue over here? Imaya rubaninu. So we'll say, if at the end of the day, right, if at the end of the day, the water in the brine mixture is the rov, kevan da avidlu ashaka tari. Ultimately, again, if the water in the brine mixture was somehow tameh, so the fact that it kisses the mikvah waters is going to make it tar. Vi'i ruba tzir, and if the majority is this tzir, right, is this brine, tzir ninhu, tzir lo bar kabule tumahu. Ultimately, again, tzir itself, Rabbi Osai, the actual fish juice itself, is not mekabel tumah. Why is the fish juice not mekabel tuma? Look at Rashi. Tzir la mekabel tuma. Dizeya ba'amuhu shiyotzim in adagim kisham olchin osan. Because we'll say ultimately again the tzir is considered to be just literally sweat. Right? The actual brine itself is not considered to be a davar chashuv. Because it's not considered to be a davar chashuv, therefore it's not mekabel tuma. So we'll say, see what's happening over here? Salocha lemaisa. Aloha lemaisa, I'm purchasing this tzir from the Am Ha'aretz. What am I concerned about? I'm concerned maybe the tzir became tameh. Maybe the Am Ha'aretz mishandled it. Therefore, says the Gemara, there's a very simple remedy. What do you do with it? You immerse it in the mikvah. You just need hashaka with the mikvah waters. Because what does that take care of? So regardless, Rabbi Osai, again, I'm good. If the water became tameh, then what? Then the hashaka, the kissing with the mikvah waters does what? Remedies the tumah. Fine, done. And if it's the tzir that you heard about becoming tameh, then what? That's not a problem either. Why? Tzir can't become tameh. Why can't tzir become tameh? Because it's too insignificant. It's not a davar chashev. And because it's not a davar chashev, therefore it is not mekabel tumah. So says the Gemara, ma'ika mishum hanach miyuta demaya, hanach batal baruba. But I don't understand. What's the issue over here? Well, the issue over here is that you're really in the tzir mixture, the only thing you really have to be concerned about is what? Is the water. Right? That's the concern. I purchased tzir from an Am Ha'aretz. My real concern is maybe the water in the mixture became tameh. Says the Gemara, I don't understand. What's the problem even if the water did become tameh? Hanach batlu baruba. Ultimately, again, the water becomes batlu barov. Right? The majority of the mixture of the brine of the tzir is not water, so the water should become batlu barov in the rest of the mixture. Ultimately, again, I'm sorry. My ika mishum hanach miyuta demaya. So therefore, again, do not worry about the miyut of the water. Hanach bataluhu beruba. Ultimately, again, that water will be batal in the rov. And therefore, again, the tzir does not become tameh. Fine. I'm Rabbi Yirmiya. So Rabbi Yirmiya qualifies this halacha. When does this work? Lo shanu ela litbal behen pito. This only works if you're going to use the tzir as a dip. If you're going to use the tzir as a dip, then you could employ this method ultimately again of being mevatel, the potential water, or purifying, not being mevatel, purifying the water that became tame. Aval likdira, but however again low. But what you can't do is you cannot use this tzir as an ingredient in a cooked dish. Why not? Because matzah mines mino v'nir. Both say this is amazing. Because what's going to happen if indeed the water inside of the tzir was tame, and you now introduce it into a pot of water, into a pot of food that has water, what's going to happen? Matzah mines mino. The water in the brine is going to combine with what? The water inside of the pot, and what? Veneer will be reawakened and will once again become tame. To which the Gemara says, what? Does that actually work? Does that actually happen? Yasser Rav Dimi v'kamrla ha-shmaita. Amrli Abaye. V'chituma shebatla chazra v'ni'ura. Nebo say, this is incredible. This goes back a little bit to our Hulin days. So we'll say, this gets into a fascinating topic of what we call chozer v'neir. Chozer v'neir means that sometimes, that there's a concept that even if something is batal, it can be reawakened subsequently. So what the Gemara is suggesting over here is like this. So let's just play out the case. I'm purchasing brine from an Ama Aretz. What's my concern? What's my concern? Is the water inside of the brine. So the Gemara says, okay, don't worry about it. We have a remedy for it. Hashaka. No problem. But then the Gemara says, by the way, even if you do hashaka, you could use it as a dip. No problem. Totally edible. But you cannot mix it into a pot of food. Because what's going to be the concern there? The concern there is that the water in the food is going to combine ultimately with the water in the tzir, reawaken the water in the tzir, and now what's going to be the problem? You could end up having a rove of mayim. And if you have a rove of mayim, that can go ahead and compromise the entire pot, says the Gemara. So is that true? Is that actually true? Does tuma actually, could tuma become reawakened? Amarle va'atlo tizbra? Yeah. Do you not hold of that? After all, va'atnan. We learned. Sa'ah chuma tamea shenafla lemea. So I'll say, if you have a sa'ah, right, listen to this. If you have a sa'ah of chuma tamea, right, you have one sa'ah of impure chuma. Shenafla lemea. Nice, right? Nice. One of those good daf yomi days. Right? So I'll say, so ultimately, again, I have one sa'ah of chuma tamea that fell into what? Shenafla lemea chulin, and it fell into 100 parts chulin. So we'll say again, the ratios here are very important. One sa'ah of truma tamea that fell into 100 sa'ah of chulin. What's ta'ala? Chulin tahorin. So the Gemara says, Rabbi Eliezer Omer Tiru. So first of all, look at Rashi. Lemea chulin tahorin. Shelo hochshiru belo tim asan benefila. So we'll say this chulin was never hochshir lekabel tuma. Ultimately, again, it was never readied to be makabel tuma. It never became wet. And therefore, again, does not become tame when the sa'ah of truma tamea is mixed in. So says the Gemara. So what do you do now? Rabbi Eliezer Omer Tirum Vitirakev. Rabbi Eliezer says, you have to go ahead and what? You have to take out truma, right? You have to remove the sa'ah of truma, viterakev, and ultimately, again, you let the sa'ah of truma rot. Why? Rashi says, kidin truma tameya. In other words, you have to separate out the sa'ah of truma tameya and let it rot. Shani omer, because I will say, shani omer, he sa'ah shenafla, he sa'ah sha'alsa. I assume that the sa'ah that fell in is the sa'ah that I remove. The chacham say a little bit differently. They say ta'ale v'te'achel. Look at Rashi. Ta'ale v'tibatel v'te'achel em chulal. Ultimately, again, we say that the sa'ah of truma tameya is batel, and therefore can be consumed with the mixture. However, v'te'achel nikudim okalayos. But again, here's the only catch. The catch is you have to eat it nikudim. Rashi says over here, nikudim is biyovesh. Kimo yovesh hay nikudim. De'achshav afagav she'ish batmeya utohora. So listen to this. This is actually quite amazing. The Chachamim saying that the Truma Tameya will be batel in the mixture, and you can eat the mixture, but you have to eat the mixture dry. Why do you have to eat the mixture dry? Because if the mixture gets wet, and the chulin becomes hoksha lekabel tuma, the chulin can become tame as a result of the Truma Tameya. This is fascinating. So Chachamim say, it's batel, and you can eat it. But you can only prepare it in a dry manner. That's nekudim. Kalayos means parched. You roast it. Otilush v'meperos. Or you could wet it and you could knead it ultimately with fruit juices, which were not one of the seven liquids, which ultimately, again, makes something hukshul kabotoma. Or you could go ahead and divide it up ultimately again into smaller doughs. As long as what? None of those doughs ultimately again have the shear of a beitza. Now I both say, so this is quite really amazing and fascinating. So remember again, once of Truma Tzmeya that's getting mixed in with a hundred portions of Chulin Tohorin. Rabbi Eliezer says essentially, he says you have to remove a sa'ah. And you're just going to treat it, you're going to assume that the sa'ah that you remove is the sa'ah that fell in. Remove the Truma Tzmeya and let it rot like the din of Truma Tzmeya. Chachamim say it is batal. It is batal. It's batal, but yet, what's the halacha? It's batal, but you have to handle it with care. Handle it with care and prevent the mixture from getting wet, right? Prevent the mixture from getting wet. Eat it dry, so that ultimately, again, the Truma Tzmeya cannot convey Tuma to the chulin. So either eat it dry, or use fruit juices, or divide it up into smaller doughs, as long as what? Each subsequent dough does not have the shear of a beitza. We'll say, we're going to stop over here at that last piece about dividing up the doughs into smaller amounts, and Mir HaTashem will expound upon tomorrow. Let me share with you a short idea.